Does it surprise you to learn that Luigi Mangione, the man police say assassinated, ambushed, murdered UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson last week, does it surprise you to learn that this 26-year-old accused killer is wealthy?
Had a very elite education from a private high school to University of Pennsylvania, one of the more elite Ivy League schools.
I was surprised when I heard it. I thought this was some organized crime type thing that we were going to learn about.
No, in fact, I know I mentioned it last week. I don't know when I mentioned it on the air, but I said I wouldn't be surprised if this wasn't your standard Antifa type. You know, wealthy, coddled, spoiled, white guy who hates the country, who hates the country, who has always hated the country, who doesn't see police officers but only symbols, and is happily willing to engage in violence. It hasn't reached the point of gunfire from Antifa, but now we see it. And, of course, it's celebrated among those types of people on the far left.
Yeah, the biography of the suspect that you're talking about has a lot of parallels to some of the Antifa rhetoric that we've certainly watched and seen. And then one of the other things that's going on here is that, you know, last week there were kind of hints from people on that political left and saying that, well, you know, maybe shooting and killing this healthcare, UnitedHealthcare CEO could be justified in some way. And the people that were kind of hinting and saying those veiled things last week were the same ones that were saying Daniel Penny needed to be convicted in the death of Jordan Neely. So consider that connection here as well.
And of course, just as we were getting off the air, the jury verdict acquitting, clearing Daniel Penny of any charges.
Not just a hung jury, but a unanimous, not guilty verdict.
So they clearly did some genuine rethinking and deliberating, because the Daniel Penny jury was deadlocked, meaning at least one juror was holding out to convict him on the most serious charge. And the judge, when he saw that the impasse was not going to be broken, urged them to start deliberating on the lesser charge, which still would have sent Daniel Penny to prison for several years.
And I think ultimately at that same time there was the deadlock dismissed the more serious charge. And then they moved on to that.
So he said, I'll dismiss the most serious charge, but because this judge clearly was in sympathy with Alvin Bragg, the notoriously politicized DA. This is the guy who brought the criminal charge against Donald Trump. A guy who's famous for not bringing criminal charges against actual street criminals, but was willing to throw the book at Daniel Penny. And he said, well, why don't you deliberate now on the lesser charge, clearly thinking that they were going to compromise with a guilty verdict. And again, this shouldn't have even come up. And we'll go into a little detail about this in about a half hour on the show, why this should have never gone to trial. But the jury, after thinking about it over the weekend, they came back and unanimously cleared him of the lesser charge yesterday. So that was a very welcome thing to hear. The only people who aren't pleased are, frankly, hateful people and racist people, racial demagogues and the like. And we'll get into how they are reacting as well. But I want to start out this hour of the show talking about Luigi Mangione. Is it Mangione or Mangione?
I've heard it with the E at the end.
Yes, with Mangione.
Yeah. Like, sadly, I keep thinking of the artist, Chuck Mangione.
Yeah, the trumpet player. Yeah.
It's spelled the same way. Luigi Mangione is 26. He is heir to a holiday resort fortune created by his grandparents, immigrants who achieved the American dream. His sister is a respected physician. His, as I mentioned, his grandfather owned the Turf Valley Resort and also the Hayfields Country Club. He owned a radio station, WCBM, in Baltimore. This was a guy, again, you would think this would be someone who understands the American dream. His grandfather grew up poor, worked his way up from next to nothing. Founded Lorien Health Services, a nursing home, where Luigi, when he was a boy, volunteered. So this is the family. This is the background of this guy. They caught him yesterday at an Altoona, Pennsylvania McDonald's. Boy, talk about heroic action here. It was an alert employee at McDonald's who noticed him and took action. Have a listen.
There are more than 13,000 McDonald's restaurants in the United States, but only one where a customer can say their gut is what led to the arrest of Luigi Mangione. Altoona's deputy police chief says their officers approached the man and asked him if he'd been to New York City recently.
And that really invoked a physical reaction from the suspect. He became visibly nervous, kind of shaking at that question, and he didn't really answer it directly. So that statement alone really said a lot.
According to KDKA radio in Pittsburgh, the police officer who cuffed Mangione is a rookie officer. He's only been on the force about a half a year.
Officer Tyler Fry said they recognized Mangione immediately after asking him to pull his mask down, and they took it from there. Fry has only been on the job 6 months.
I can't say I was expecting it by any means, but it feels good to get a guy like that off the street, especially starting my career this way. It feels great.
Here's what NYPD, New York Police, had to say about the arrest.
As the commissioner stated earlier, a man was taken into custody today at Altoona, Pennsylvania this morning. He has been identified as Luigi Nicholas Mangione. He's a male, 26 years old. He was born and raised in Maryland. We know he has ties to San Francisco, California, and his last known address was Honolulu, Hawaii. He has no prior arrest history in New York. Members of the NYPD Detective Bureau are currently traveling to Pennsylvania with members of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office to interview this subject. This case was brought to a successful conclusion based on the coordinated effort between numerous NYPD units, including the Intelligence and Counterterrorism Bureau, our federal partners at the FBI, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and, of course, members of the Altoona Police Department in Pennsylvania.
How about that? All right. Now, as for a motive, well, we have a pretty clear idea what the motive is. He all but advertised the motive by writing the words deny and depose on the casings of the bullets that he fired at the CEO of United Healthcare, Mr. Thompson.
Why Mangione allegedly targeted Brian Thompson is unclear. Authorities confirmed a manifesto was found on him, but wouldn't divulge its contents.
We don't think that there's any specific threats to other people mentioned in that document, but it does seem that he has some ill will toward corporate America.
Toward corporate America, period. Again, this is your perfect example of your leftist, your woke, ideologically driven leftist. Born in comfort, blessed with a standard of living he did not earn, and all he can think about is who he resents. He is being portrayed as a very intelligent guy. As Philip Jay just pointed out, he attended University of Pennsylvania and Ivy League schools where Donald Trump went to college. But he was found, when they arrested him, in possession of the gun believed to have been used in the shooting, a silencer, a fraudulent New Jersey ID, and a manifesto showing how much he hated the healthcare industry. In other words, much of the evidence that will be used against him in court, he had with him at the time he was arrested. Talk about leaving clues. The guy is walking around with clues in his clothing. A McDonald's worker called the cops after recognizing him from the images that were widely circulated on social media, television, newspapers, etc. As you heard Philip Jay, he say he attended the Gilman School, which is kind of like Lakeside School. You know, it's very elite.
That's saying something.
Private school, $40,000 a year. That's three times more than it costs to attend the University of Washington.
Wow.
Okay. He graduated in 2016, was valedictorian, and then off to Penn, where he studied software engineering. He worked at an online car market doing software work, TrueCar, in Santa Monica. Stopped working there almost 2 years ago. Apparently suffered some sort of a back injury. And it's not clear what caused that. He also, as you heard, has ties to San Francisco and Hawaii. So there you have it. Spoiled, rich kid who grew up in comfort, could have used his mind and his money to make life better for a lot of people, doing something productive. And instead, he nurses this grudge against big businesses, against corporate America. They also believe that the gun that he used to kill Brian Thompson may have been made with a 3D printer, a so-called ghost gun. So that is what we now know about the man police say is responsible for the horrifying assassination ambush killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
Couple post notes I got for you on that. We always say when you see crime, see something, report it.
Yes.
Not sure what the accurate numbers.
See something, say something.
Yeah, not accurate on numbers in Seattle yet, but Aaron Katursky of ABC says 60,000. I looked at a document of July of 2024 of 40,000 surveillance cameras in the city of New York City that they had a lot of documentation. Added note, the tip-off from the employee, apparently crucial in the case, $50,000 reward, NYPD added 10,000 more. He may not get it. Rules are complicated. Many websites, including Unilad Media, saying they stipulate tipsters in with a chance of the FBI portion of the reward cannot nominate themselves. The means of the McDonald's worker will have to put forward. An investigating agency has to get involved now.
I'll nominate him.
could go to the Department of Defense or the FBI, which is then reviewed by an interagent committee, if approved.
Good Lord.
The suggestion is passed on to the Secretary of State, who then has to sign off final decision if that McDonald's employee gets the $50,000 reward in the tip of finding the shooter in the added 10 grand from NYPD. I'll keep an eye on it.
Well, all I know, everybody knows, is this. If that employee had not acted on his or her instincts.
6 months on the job, did you say?
And called the police, then this guy would still probably be at large. I don't know how long the employee's been there.
Yeah, that I don't think has been divulged
the,
or
the arresting
explained.
Officer
had been on patrol for 6 months.
The officer was 6 months.
Been a patrol officer for 6 months. So I hope this brings a measure of relief to the Thompson family. It's just so awful to see a husband and father gunned down like this, and then immediately having him dehumanized and demonized by people who hate healthcare companies and who think that it's a good thing. You know, there are journalists out there, I'm using air quotes here, journalists and politically prominent people who are either shrugging or actually celebrating the shooting of this man. And again, he's never been accused of any kind of wrongdoing. He just happens to lead the healthcare company that is the most popular healthcare company for people buying Medicare supplemental insurance.
My folks are on Medicaid, and United supplies their healthcare coverage.
So that is what we know. A former classmate said that Luigi Mangione was a, quote, totally normal guy when he was in college. And he was in college not that long ago. Happens to not only have a bachelor's degree in computer science, has a minor in mathematics, and a master's degree in computer science as well. So all that intelligence, and look how he applied it. Again, there is a real sickness in our society where some of the most blessed people, some of the most privileged people somehow hate this country and are looking for ways to strike at it and people in it. It is 21 and a half minutes after 6. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the morning's first social media sweep. Good morning. I don't know. You have to listen to it very carefully. It's just an ever so subtle tweaking of the Gene Autry song, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. They sound almost alike.
Little Berry Gordy influence with a Temptations Motown-ish version of it.
All right.
Got that Eddie Kendricks soprano falsetto.
There you go. Yeah. Just a little different from Gene Autry. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is going on in the social media world?
First, some of the first reaction I'm seeing to the arrest of the 26-year-old suspect in the assassination murder allegedly of the United Healthcare CEO, and the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. One of the people I follow on social media, kind of a business approach, free market advocate, Carol Roth. She ends up on Fox Business News from time to time. She posted about the suspect's connection to the University of Pennsylvania, the schooling, the elite education that you were talking about in the last segment, that 26-year-old suspect, Luigi Mangione. And she writes, "Once again, we are reminded that the Ivy League schools are now merely hedge funds with indoctrination camps attached." And you could apply that to what we saw earlier this year at Columbia University, some of the other Ivy League schools with the pro-Hamas activists on campus and protests and occupations.
Who could forget Silas Bissell? Silas Bissell, his nickname was Trim. Who was heir to the Bissell vacuum cleaner fortune. He was the guy who planted a bomb at the UW back in, I think, 1970, 69, 70. during the anti-war.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it was not a firecracker. It was a bomb at the ROTC. He was looking to maim or kill people. So, yes, there is this insidious disease among some wealthy people where, you know, I'm rich, I'm free, and I hate this country.
Yeah. And then acrimony in New York City after the not guilty verdict of Daniel Penny on the negligent homicide charge. Fox News reporter C.B. Cotton had recorded this audio / video of activists that were demanding Daniel Penny's conviction. Listen to this activist with a bullhorn. This is right outside the New York City courthouse where Daniel Penny was acquitted.
Daniel Penny, wherever you are today, you'll put on notice. No matter how this outcome comes, you're not welcome in New York.
No.
You're not allowed to walk these streets.
No.
We patrol them.
Yeah.
Not the NYPD.
No.
Not your security.
No.
This is our town.
That's right.
You're not safe here, homie.
Right.
Pack your shit and get out of town.
That's right.
Straight like that.
You're not safe here is the threat. So that's what passes for critical thinking among the activists left in New York City that I guess are supporting Alvin Bragg as he goes after this prosecution.
Well, to the contrary.
Yeah.
New York will be much better off if there were lots of more people like Daniel Penny and a lot fewer people like Alvin Bragg and this joker here.
Yeah, just maddening.
Again, just people who hate. People whose view of this entire controversy would be entirely different if the races were simply reversed.
And there is a reminder in all of this video that was submitted and used as evidence in the trial, Daniel Penny using the sleeper hold. There's a black man assisting Daniel Penny as he is, you know, trying to subdue Jordan Neely. So there's a black man who was assisting, essentially, Daniel Penny.
Black witnesses, including women, testified on Daniel Penny's behalf at the trial.
And
again,
there were black people on the jury that voted not guilty to acquit him.
Had nothing to do with race. But the prosecution, wait until you find out what the prosecution did to try and make it about race. I'm going to let you know what was happening right after this. It's 6:31 on the John Carlson Show. Good. Want more Lars? Get more Lars in about 15 minutes. You don't even have to wait till noon. Be chatting with Lars here in a few minutes on the John Carlson Show. All right. As we were getting off the air yesterday, the big news came in from New York City that Alvin Bragg has lost again. The obese, extreme, arrogant, obnoxious New York DA, George Soros DA, same guy who helped make Donald Trump president by trumping up, pun intended, charges conflating a disputed misdemeanor for which the statute of limitations had lapsed 6 years previous into 34 felonies. The conviction simply strengthened Donald Trump's support. It completely blew up in the face of Alvin Bragg and the judge in the case, and frankly, the Democrats who were cheering the use of the legal system as a weapon to try and destroy Donald Trump. So in an odd kind of way, Alvin Bragg helped determine the outcome of the 2024 election. He also lost big time in this trial regarding Daniel Penny. I'm going to take you back into May 2023. It's the F train, the F subway in New York City. Jordan Neely, who is a criminal, drug addict, mental health issues. The media have not really talked much about this, but he had just been released from prison for brutally attacking a 67-year-old woman, beating her so badly he broke bones in her face. So here he is on the subway. And again, we're not talking about a platform where you can just walk away from someone acting strange. This is the subway car as it's traveling. And he began menacing the passengers. And he started ranting, "Someone's going to die today. I'm willing to die and go to jail." Passengers were frightened until Mr. Penny stepped up and applied a sleeper hold until police arrived at a station stop and took Jordan Neely away. Again, there were several other passengers who helped Daniel Penny. Daniel Penny's a pretty tall guy, tall, strapping guy, former Marine. And he didn't pummel him, didn't punch and kick him. He just put the sleeper hold on him to get him to leave people alone. People on the subway were not divided over whether Daniel Penny should have been doing this. They were all gratified. They rolled Jordan Neely into a position so he could breathe easier. And everyone there believed that Jordan Neely was still alive when the police came. Officers asked him if he would come with them and make a statement. And he was happy to do so. He had no idea he was a suspect because they had no idea that Jordan Neely had died. Get this, the police didn't tell him that Neely had died. And while Neely did die after being taken off the subway, it's not clear that it was the sleeper hold, being called the choke hold by the news media, that caused it. He had a potent synthetic drug called K2 in his system, also had various health challenges. It was clear that people who are being threatened with force have the right to defend themselves and others. That is exactly what happened here. And because they wanted to charge him and send a message to New Yorkers, hey, don't think about getting involved to help other people. They racialized the case because Jordan Neely is black and Daniel Penny, Caucasian. There is zero evidence that Daniel Penny was motivated by race. And as we mentioned just a few minutes ago, many of the passengers protected, including some who testified at trial, were black. And they were just as frightened of Jordan Neely as they were just as afraid of that guy as any of the other passengers. And yet, do you know what how the prosecutors referred to Daniel Penny throughout the trial in the courtroom? The white defendant. Or the white man. This worthless judge, Maxwell Wiley is his name, allowed them to do that. Refer to Daniel Penny throughout the trial as the white defendant, the white man. So you have, again, woke prosecutors working for a woke DA trying to establish racial solidarity with maybe we can get at least one or two of the black jurors will, you know, develop racial animosity and not make up their minds based on the facts. That's what they were banking on. This is no different than in the 1930s, a Southern courtroom where charges are being brought against a black man who clearly does not deserve it, and they keep referring to the white victim and the black defendant. It's the same kind of racial game, same kind of cynical racial tactic. And this judge allowed them to do this. So when they began deliberating, they were deadlocked on the more serious charge, the manslaughter charge. So this tactic appeared to have worked on at least one of the jurors. But because they were deadlocked, the judge could have declared a mistrial. Instead, the judge dismissed the manslaughter count, even though that was the whole gist of the trial. That was their strategy. And asked the jury to come back on Monday and rethink the secondary charge, hoping that they would compromise on the negligence count. So basically what they wanted was they wanted a couple of a black juror or two to be caught up by the attempt to racialize the trial, and the other jurors would agree to, well, we'll just compromise and find him guilty on the negligence count. That did not happen. Instead, they reconvened yesterday, and over the weekend, I guess those jurors who were thinking otherwise last week decided, no, this is BS. And they ended up quickly, sweepingly clearing Daniel Penny. They acquitted him on even the secondary charge. So there's a very good piece in National Review that goes into these details called Justice for Daniel Penny. It's their editorial this morning, nationalreview.com. That's nationalreview.com. So this is good news for Daniel Penny. But once again, this is how, quote, woke justice, close quote, works in this country. Make it about race. Try and minimize the importance of facts and evidence and play up the issue of race. That is how they roll. And the good news is that it simply didn't work. Looks like it was starting to work, but ultimately it did not. And a little later on, I will play you what one of the Black Lives Matter activists had to say outside the courtroom. But that's for later, because our good buddy Lars Larson joins us in just a couple of minutes here on The Commute with Carlson. It is 13 minutes to 7 o'clock. Good morning.
Cartwright family. Ben Cartwright, Little Joel Hoss.
Oh, my goodness, from Bonanza?
Adam. They actually released an album.
Things did go off the rails during the 60s, didn't they? All right. Okay. Outside the New York courtroom where Daniel Penny was cleared by a New York jury of any responsibility in the death of Jordan Neely. Here is what one Black Lives Matter leader had to say.
Just like everybody else has vigilantes, we need some black vigilantes.
That's right.
People want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud. How about we do the same when they attempt to oppress us?
Right.
I'm tired.
Tired.
I know you're looking for us to be like, tired. Oh, go and march. Go and march. No. This weekend, I want you to hold a community event everywhere from the Bronx to Houston to Seattle to Florida. Black people, hold community event and talk about what you need.
What people need are more Daniel Pennies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lars Larson, what say you?
They need safety, and they need the assurance that good Samaritans like Daniel Penny will not be held back for fear that they'll end up spending the rest of their life in jail if they stand up and defend against somebody who's threatening. See, I don't care what color he is. In fact, the fact that black so-called leaders are making this a color issue tells you a lot, because the majority of the victims of black criminals are black people.
Yes, and
that is a statistical fact.
And there were witnesses in the trial who thanked Daniel Penny for stepping forward because they were on that subway. And
yep.
They felt threatened and they felt frightened by Jordan Neely. Here's what is depressing, is that you and I, because I know you well enough, Lars, you and I would have exactly the same position on this issue if Daniel
yep.
Penny were black and Jordan Neely was a crazy white guy.
Correct.
We would have the exact same position. But these Black Lives Matter leaders and activists and Alvin Bragg, the DA, they completely changed their position based on the race of the people involved. If you switch the races, their position would race. Their position would change.
Which suggests that those DAs who take that position have ignored the Constitution, one of the Constitution's most basic promises, and that is we will all be treated equally under the law. If you are threatening and you are dangerous and you have black skin, you get treated the same way, no worse, no better than the same person doing the same threats or creating the same situation who has white skin.
There you go. Again, we need justice in this country to be based on facts and behavior, not on race. That is the civil rights position. And that is what the Reverend Dr. King was marching about in the 50s and 60s. Lars Larson, great hearing your voice and looking forward to hearing more from you at noon.
Thank you, Johnny.
It is 4 minutes to 7 o'clock. Hour number two of The Commute with Carlson. Oh, man, is it going to be a humdinger? Hold on. Right around the corner. Let's get to your headlines first. Welcome to hour number two of The John Carlson Show. You just missed a great hour of the show. We might recap some of that information later on, later in the 8 o'clock hour. Maybe.
If you miss it, I guess you've always got the option to go to KVI.com, and you can check out every show there. We post those late morning after we wrap up the show. But yeah, if you miss something, be sure to be checking out KVI.com for show highlights and the entire show podcast.
Known as the John Carlson Podcast.
Yeah.
With highlights right there for you. Okay. We're going to start local here in a minute. But first, a personal note, a little bit of a promotion. I told you last month that I decided to go on a diet because I had, during COVID, I'd gotten off my fitness routine. I mean, you all know I'm a stickler for physical fitness. You all know about, you know, climbing mountains for charity and all this other thing and all this other stuff. And during COVID, you either got in really great shape because you were home a lot and, you know, doing a lot of stuff from home, and that means physical fitness, or you got thrown off your fitness routine and your dieting routine, and you gained a lot of weight. Okay, I am in the second category. And during the summer, late summer, I realized I've got to lose 20 pounds. So you have a range of options. Okay, what is that new fad drug, Ozempic?
Yeah,
I think that's one of them. There's another one, but that's right now, yeah. One of the biggies.
Okay. I said, no, I don't want to take drugs. And second, I don't have the time anymore. You know, with my second job at Kemper Development, where I'm heading government relations, I don't have time to do six workouts a week, which I used to do when I was doing Body for Life. And I lost a lot of weight and was in best shape of my life. I just don't have the time to put that much into it. So I'm not going to take drugs. I don't have time to do a workout every day. And thirdly, I'm not going to go on a diet where I eat food that tastes like cardboard. Is there anything out there? And my son, Matthew, actually found a diet. His boss was on it. It's called the Fast Metabolism Diet. And you don't have to join a program and spend a couple of $1,000. It's online. and you can buy the book Fast Metabolism Diet, but again, it's just a book. And there's all sorts of recipes in the book, and what it's all about is eating differently, and frankly, eating better food that is better for you, so that you metabolize your food more quickly. And there, and it's called the Fast Metabolism Diet. So it is a 28-day program. And what it all boils down to is you emphasize natural carbohydrates from fruit during Monday and Tuesday. And then you emphasize protein on Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you kind of blend the two. And there's all sorts of different options. And here's the best part of the diet. You don't go hungry. You're not supposed to go hungry. In fact, they discourage you from going hungry because they say if you don't eat when you're hungry, if you end up starving yourself, all you're going to do is lose muscle, and then when you do start eating, you're going to binge. So the Fast Metabolism Diet, yes, you can eat steak. Yes, you can eat chicken. Yes, but not fried chicken. You can enjoy salads. You know, but be careful what dressing you put on it. I mean, things like that. And in 28 days, I went on the diet, was faithful to the diet, and I lost 18 and a half pounds in 28 days. And then by then, the diet was not that difficult to stay on, so I stayed on kind of a variation of the diet. And I lost another 8 pounds. So I'm down like 26, 27 pounds, and it's stayed off. And again, that's without going hungry, without eating food that tastes like cardboard, without spending thousands of dollars, without using any drugs. It's all natural food. I will tell you, I've eaten more greens than I have eaten in a long, long time, but I've been able to disguise the taste. So The person behind this diet, the author of the book, The Fast Metabolism Diet, is named Haley Pomeroy. She's going to join me on the show on Thursday at 8 o'clock. And she's going to share the diet with you, because what a great Christmas present. A free way to learn how to lose a lot of weight, again, without going hungry, without using drugs, without eating food that tastes like cardboard, and without spending a lot of money. All right, Merry Christmas.
That's going to be quite a treat. I'm just thinking about it here. As we get into the holidays, we're going to have the prep already of something we can do.
Yes. But I tell you this so you can get into the diet early. There are trade-offs. There are definitely trade-offs. I'll give you one example. Don't eat anything made from refined sugar. So, like, for instance, this morning I had oatmeal. Oatmeal with blueberries and almond milk. Brown sugar, but with cinnamon and a sugar substitute called stevia. Anyway, still tastes great. It's, again, oatmeal with blueberries.
Well, you had me at, you don't have to eat food that tastes like cardboard, and you don't starve.
You don't go hungry.
That will work.
Don't use drugs. You don't spend a lot of money. I mean, you have to buy the food, but you have to buy the food anyway, right? You're going to buy food anyway. And it does mean you won't be buying as much fast food. So be listening Thursday and learn more and see if it works for you like it has worked for me. I like sharing information that will not just enlighten you about, you know, politics and business and culture and issues like that, but also just things that'll make you happier and make you healthier.
Okay, real quick, too. In the research of this, family finds this for you. John takes it, tries it, it works. When you called and asked about an interview, was she in shock? Did she get a lot of radio people or, you know, famous radio hosts?
She's,
or like,
oh, no, she's.
Wow, I get to be on the air and share my.
She's very thoughts. Much in demand.
Oh, okay.
Very much in demand.
Oh, this will be fun.
And it took a while to line it up. So,
yeah.
I am really looking forward to it. I've never talked to her before.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, just out of the blue, she hears a radio host in Seattle named John Carlson, and apparently it's working for him. And
she's had she's been on all the TV shows, you know, the morning news shows and all these things. And she's quite well known on the internet. But again, we're not talking about, pour this potion into this formula, and no.
And here's your membership delivered to your front door.
Naturally, yes. It is 13 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock. Good news, bad news here on this local story. A Seattle man is going to be going to prison for legally buying guns and then selling them to criminals who cannot legally own a gun. That's called straw purchasing. And when you hear the story, let's see if you can spot the downside of this story. The good news, again, is they got the bad guy doing bad things.
A man who admitted to putting guns into the hands of violent criminals for years learned his punishment Friday. The ATF matched guns legally purchased by Dion Cooper to dozens of crimes, including shootings as well as robberies. Cooper was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison after pleading guilty to charges of trafficking firearms and making false statements during a gun purchase. KMOS Jeremy Harris has details.
Dion Cooper may have walked out of court, but he'll soon have to report to federal prison for a 3-year sentence in what prosecutors call the largest straw purchasing case in Seattle history.
This is a very strong sentence.
By Assistant United States Attorney Todd Greenberg prosecuted Cooper.
So a 3-year sentence in this case does send a message, and I hope it's heard by others like Dion Cooper.
The ATF proved Cooper was buying guns at stores around Seattle, then giving those guns to felons and juveniles who couldn't legally buy them. Investigators linked the guns Cooper bought to dozens of violent crimes, including this 2023 homicide in South Seattle.
54 of the guns that Dion Cooper purchased were linked to and used in violent crimes, a homicide, drive-by shootings, armed robberies, bank robberies, assaults. So this wasn't theoretical at all. These guns caused immense harm in our community.
Okay, I'm with you. But will you please explain to me why someone who bought legally and then sold illegally guns used in 54 violent crimes, including a murder, is only getting 3 years? I mean, Mr. Greenberg here, Todd Greenberg, the prosecutor, good job prosecuting the case, but why do you think 3 years is a strong sentence? You know, how about 6 months for every violent crime committed with the firearms that you put into the hands of people who cannot legally own a firearm? That would have made it a 27-year sentence. You think that would have gotten people's attention, maybe even a little bit more?
That sounds a little bit more reasonable, 27 years.
Again, you're putting the firearm in the hands of people that you know are going to use it to commit violent crimes and did go out and commit violent crimes. So why not have a sentence calibrated to the number of violent incidents committed with the illegal guns that you supplied through your straw purchase? Now, I will tell you, 3 years is better than nothing. But I don't think it's nearly long enough. I mean, there are all sorts of red flags in this case. Here, have a listen.
Court documents list the guns that Cooper bought, saying gun store employees were suspicious of him. And in one case, an employee asked him, quote, "You're buying all these for yourself, right?" Cooper responded, "Yes, they're all for me." Then the employee asked Cooper what happened to the guns he previously bought, to which Cooper responded something to the effect of, "I lost a bunch of them."
Oh, that's okay. Here, fill the shopping cart. That just doesn't sound right, John.
Well, I'll tell you what I believe may have happened here. I'm reading between the lines. But, you know, there's this popular stereotype among anti-gun people that gun stores, they don't care. They're indifferent. They'll just, you know, as long as you pass the background check, they'll sell you whatever you want. I know gun dealers who have refused to sell guns to people in their stores because they simply didn't have a good feeling about them. And what do you want to bet that the ATF, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, what do you want to bet they got a tip from a gun store? Hey, this guy's buying a lot of firearms and it's not quite working out here.
What happened to the other guns? I lost them.
Yeah, I lost a bunch of them. I would not be surprised.
Gun shop owners love to hear your comment on this one.
Because I know people who are gun dealer, licensed gun dealers, and I know people who are in the gun business, firearm business, and I'm telling you, they probably tipped off the ATF about this guy because they don't want this guy on the streets. It's sullying their profession.
Well, and they see the odd, suspicious red flag behavior of 50. You're buying 50 more guns. You were just here not too long ago and bought a bunch of guns.
Yeah, these were the crimes that they've definitely, definitively linked to this guy. What do you want to bet? There are many, many more. But anyway, again, I'm glad he's going to prison. 3 years. the prosecutor thinks was a long sentence. It is, comparatively speaking, long, because straw purchasing really isn't a priority crime. It ought to be. I mean, if we really say we don't want gun violence in America, why aren't we putting a lot more emphasis and a lot stronger sentences behind people who engage in straw purchasing? That is, they legally buy a gun and then give it or sell it to a criminal for the purpose of committing crime. Or people who steal guns. Or people with criminal records who carry guns. That's illegal, too. Why aren't we throwing the book at them instead of saying, oh, my God, we have to make it illegal to own an AR-15, no matter how law-abiding you are. And, oh, my God, you can't have a gun magazine with more than 10 rounds. That's out of the question. We need to show that we're against gun violence. Hey, if you want to show you're against gun violence, then start cracking down on violent people who use guns or illegally obtain them. Okay, I'll hop off the soapbox briefly here, because Philip J. Vandenberg III, right around the corner with a social media sweep at 21 minutes after 7. Good morning. Checking the pulse of politics here, I detect activity. I detect Philip J. Vandenberg III.
Is your alert going off?
It's ready with a social media sweep.
Yeah. Sleigh ride full of it.
I do kind of have a sleigh full of social media stuff.
All right.
Social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Let's start with our afternoon host, Ari Hoffman. Ari Hoffman is always in the middle of the controversies, and he's digging into a story.
That's why we like him.
The Edmonds School District and a specific school, Meadowdale High School.
Yeah.
And Meadowdale High School had apparently planned to have some sort of a meeting for students and parents. And according to Ari's post on social media, he wrote, earlier this week, Meadowdale High School in Linwood, part of the Edmonds School District, emailed families inviting them to a meeting to prepare for immigration raids and immigration customs enforcement leading up to the Trump presidency. And that event ended up getting canceled after news and word of the scheduled meeting started to spread. And then Ari had pointed out that one of the presenters at this planned meeting was going to be the Mexican consulate. So yeah. They decided that they needed to cancel this meeting that was called for whatever reason. Right?
You understand, Tom Homan has made it abundantly clear time after time after time.
This is the appointee by Donald Trump.
The man mm-hmm. who will be carrying out the deportation program for the Trump administration, a man who knows how to do this job very well, he headed ICE for Trump,
yeah.
said that they are going to prioritize public safety risks, meaning criminals,
yeah.
and national security threats. And yet here you have activists who are trying to create a panic. Oh, they're coming into the schools. They're going to start seizing kids and their parents. There they are in the line to pick up their kids. They're going to pounce on the car.
Intercept?
No. Nothing of the sort. They never should have even bothered to give them a meeting in the first place. They said, no, it's very clear. How these arrests and deportations will be prioritized. And if you're a national security threat or a public safety threat, you don't belong in the public schools and you don't belong in this country.
Yeah. So based on the arrest in Altoona, Pennsylvania, of the suspect in the assassination of the United Healthcare CEO in New York City, this all happened at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. And
right.
Newsweek has just posted a story that says that McDonald's location in Altoona has now been flooded with negative reviews after the arrest of 26-year-old suspect Luigi Mangione. So Google has had to remove a series of derogatory one-star reviews about the restaurant. And the Newsweek says this is an example of review bombing, where a large number of accounts post negative reviews to harm the popularity of a business, often one that is widely reported after some sort of a news event. And one of the reviews wrote, "Do not stop here if you are an American hero," kind of portraying Luigi Mangione, the suspect in the assassination murder, as an American hero. And the review said, "The McDonald's will sell you out." And so in a statement, a Google spokesperson said, "All these reviews violate our policies and have been removed." But that's how some of these people who are trying to justify the murder of a healthcare company CEO are reacting.
Again,
ugly.
Not a CEO ugly. Who's under indictment, not a CEO who's been convicted, just a CEO who happens to run the insurance arm of the most popular company with American seniors who are buying Medicare supplemental insurance. That's his sin, running a very successful company. Okay, when we come back, we will talk with former King County prosecutor and current mayor of Federal Way, Jim Farrell. What are they doing in Federal Way that's resulting in a massive reduction in crime? Perhaps it's something that some other cities around King County might want to think about. He'll tell you what he's doing coming right up.
James Tedder does great at holiday music. Gift idea for the music lover, John. Here we go. The Sweet Baby James Tour. He's going to do it in 2025. Goes on sale this Friday the 13th, 20 cities. He's got Ridgefield, Washington for May 23rd. I just confirmed. May 25th, 26th.
Did you say Richmond, Michelle. Washington?
Ridgefield, which is down south on their way to Portland.
Oh, you mean down to Vancouver?
Yeah, on the way. Great okay. venue, by the way. Yeah. And then he's got the Chateau St. Michelle Winery for the 25th and 26th in May. Love the fact it makes it easy. For all ticket information and all that, just go to jamestaylor.com. Tickets on sale Friday.
37 minutes after 7 o'clock. I love some of these comments on the KVI comment line. We began the show, launched the 6 o'clock hour, talking about the 26-year-old accused murderer of healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Luigi Mangione was caught at a McDonald's, and one of our listeners said, "Does anyone find it ironic that the CEO assassination suspect is allegedly anti-capitalist but was apprehended at one of the biggest global companies, McDonald's? And he left many DNA clues at a Starbucks in New York minutes before the murder?" Fair point. I haven't heard anyone else point that out. Good for you. Good for you. We've got more comments we'll share with you a little bit later. Right now, we have a patient mayor awaiting, Jim Farrell, the mayor of Federal Way, Washington, and a good friend of mine. His city was in the news because Federal Way, which has had a problem with crime, has some good news to share at the end of the year. Crime is down by double digits in Federal Way this year. And a lot of the credit, he says, owes to a change in a couple of state laws. One where the legislature was basically dragged kicking and screaming to change drug laws. And secondly, a law that was all but forced upon them by a citizens' initiative. Jim Farrell, welcome to the John Carlson Show this morning. How are you?
Great, John. Good morning, and thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you making the time. Well, congratulations. Crime has been going up and up and up in cities, towns, counties throughout Washington, a new state record for homicides last year. But in Federal Way, in 2024, you went in the opposite direction.
We did dramatically. You know, I've been watching this car theft number, and it was sticking pretty much all year, you know, the year-to-date numbers at about half, 50% down. So we got the year to date through November of this year compared to November of last year. And car theft this year is down 52%. But the number that got my attention, because I had been watching the car theft number, which makes total sense that car theft had gone down because of the pursuit law, but robberies are down 42% in the city of Federal Way. Homicides down 50%. Residential burglaries down 18%. And so, I think number one, it's the ability to pursue people. And I think the word was out that, you know, almost every crime that was occurring of those crimes that I've mentioned occurred in a stolen car in mm-hmm. Federal Way. Mm-hmm. And so you remove the ability of people to be able to move around in stolen cars, and the numbers have dropped precipitously.
Tell me how much of this drop that you ascribe, would you ascribe to the police chase law being basically reversed? The legislature put a tight restriction on police chases, and yeah. Brian Haywood led the drive for an initiative to overturn and change that law in a more proactive, conservative direction. The legislature was so petrified. Again, you got one party rule down there in Olympia, as ironically your party, Jim, though you don't always agree with them. They were so petrified at this being on the ballot that they voted to make it law so it wouldn't appear on the ballot. How much of the drop in crime do you ascribe to that change?
I'd say about 80% to 90%. The word had gotten out with the criminal element, professional criminals, that it was a free crime zone and they could come to we were having in stolen cars. We were having people drive to Federal Way, run their cars, run the stolen cars into a business, loot the store, or engage in a robbery or other violent crime. And so I'd say 80% to 90%, but did you catch the other number? And that's the other law is that drug arrests in Federal Way are up 402%. And so I think the street level narcotic activity, I think, being able to interdict on that has also been responsible for a decrease in property crimes and burglaries and those kinds of things as well.
The change in drug law, again, yeah. Drugs were all but legalized. When police officers are told to give a brochure to someone they catch smoking fentanyl at least two times before finally arresting them for a misdemeanor, which was the law a couple of years ago
right.
in Washington. Yeah. It's just crazy. How much has improved with the quasi-semi gross misdemeanor designation?
Well, I really have to tell you that it was, being a former prosecutor, for 19 years, I was just astounded and really concerned about what was referred to as a de facto legalization because of the requirement for two prior warnings, which really tied police hands in regard to street level narcotic activity. And now that our hands are untied, and the idea is to get people, stop with that behavior, get them into, some sort of treatment program. But most importantly, and first and foremost, put them under arrest, get them into the criminal justice system and stop the behavior. And that helps them, too. That helps the people that are being burglarized or the shoplifts that are going on. And you just can't allow that kind of activity to occur in your community unchecked. And that's. We were seeing some really bad things happen as a result of that law. And so I also think, John, that the gross misdemeanor designation, allowing the cities and the district courts to handle this is the perfect way to handle low-level narcotic activity because, the city courts are the best way to get people the treatment that they need as opposed to, a low-level felony that's not going to have any probation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good point. But the thing is, you add some bite to it in Federal Way.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is if you think about a gross misdemeanor is punishable by up to a year in jail. And, like a DUI or a theft or those types of crimes. And the amount of time that prosecutors have available to impose jail time is a year, and it's like an hourglass. Every time somebody serves any time on a gross misdemeanor, they can only serve up to a year. So, but what that does is it gives the judge and the prosecutors great tools to say, hey, you have to, in the next year or two, you have to have no criminal law violations and get into a substance treatment if that was part of the deal. And, you know, what that does is it gets people back on the straight and narrow. And if they don't, that jail time gets revoked. And that's a powerful tool to be able to, you know, really help people and also to help the people that are being victimized.
I think that is a very worthy goal. And I, again, congratulations on the progress that has been made. Why aren't we seeing similar progress in other cities? Because, again, those same tools are out there. The same laws have changed.
I think federal – I've been thinking about this, John, because I was at a 911 Valley Communications board meeting the other day, and their calls for services are down, and I a certain percentage. And I was talking to mayors of other cities at this meeting. I've been thinking about this. I think Federal Way, because of our proximity to – and, you know, we were right on I-5, and we're between Seattle and Tacoma – I think that we were particularly hard hit by people, you know, dropping in on Federal Way, getting off the freeway, committing a crime, getting back on the freeway in a stolen car. And I think it's probably a byproduct of geography. But I also think that if we dug into the numbers in almost any community, that car theft number has really started to drop. And my prediction next year, when I talk to you next year, hopefully, I'll bet you that number keeps going down on car theft.
I hope so, too. That will be a very good sign. Okay, can I tell you what I hope happens next year in King County?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I hope that one of you mayors in South King County, because you've been cooperating together, you've been working together, and you clearly are frustrated with both King County government and with the King County Prosecutor's Office, especially the Juvenile Crime Division.
Yeah.
I hope that one of you mayors, whether it's Dana Ralph in Kent, whether it's Nancy Backus in Auburn, Frank in Renton, Pavone?
Armando Pavone.
Yeah. And you in Federal Way. Yeah. I hope one of you will run for county executive and run against, if you will, the Seattle establishment that is so out of touch and has spent a horrendous amount of money making things worse, and have the, you know, aim at the east side and north and south King County and give people representation that you know they're not getting from firsthand experience. And then I hope another one of you runs for King County prosecutor and to just have a team approach. Just have one of you run as King County prosecutor and one of you run for county executive and give King County the representation it so much deserves and so badly needs. Final word.
Yeah, you know, people don't realize, you know, if King County was a state, it'd be the 35th largest state. And with over 2 million people, you know, it really drives the economy of the entire region. And we do need leadership in King County that holds offenders accountable and, you know, really, you know, doesn't allow, you know, these type of things to occur. You know, what Norm, you know, we're talking about King County prosecutors, what the legendary Norm Mailing used to say, is that crimes like car theft and residential burglary are quality of life crimes. And when those get really high, it's just completely unacceptable and it affects our quality of life. We need leaders that are focused on making sure, people can go about their lives without being afraid of crime and being victimized by it.
All right.
Yeah.
It is great having you on the show, and I look forward to having you on the show again. And please consider my idea.
Absolutely. All right. I'll consider it. I got to talk to Wendy about it, we'll talk.
We have a county to rescue. All right. Thanks very much, Jim Farrell. Jim Farrell, right. Mayor of Federal Way, former King County prosecutor. Back when they used to prosecute crime, it was a very interesting period. Joy Reid from the floundering, flailing, and failing MSNBC gives you one more reason to hate Donald Trump. Again, this is Joy Reid.
He's not even president yet, and he's already spending his time sitting in his golden palace, Mar-a-Lago, muscling other countries like he's Tony Soprano with a social media site, doing things like reportedly debating whether or not to invade Mexico, threatening BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, with 100% tariffs if they don't commit to trading in dollars and not their own currencies, demanding Hamas release all hostages being held in Gaza before his inauguration, or there will be, quote, all hell to pay in the Middle East.
What? He's threatening Hamas with consequences if they don't release the hostages? What kind of madman did we elect? Someone who wants the hostages free? One more reason to now get worried and panicked about Donald Trump as your next commander-in-chief. MSNBC, they just watch the rubble bounce with that network. It is coming up here on 4 minutes to 8 o'clock, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. More information about the accused shooter of healthcare executive Brian Thompson right around the corner. And we're back. Hour number three of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome to the radio program of record this Tuesday, 10th day of December. So great having you out there. And the weather is broken for at least a little bit. I mean, it's very, very cold this morning, but it's sunny and it looks nice out there. I don't
Two know weeks, Christmas Eve outlook right now, Old
Get
Farmers
out of
Almanac
here.
And
really?
Northwest Weather
You said
Service.
We were going to have snow for Christmas,
yeah.
Mark.
Right now it says
what's happening?
Above normal precipitation. But temperatures a little above normal, like 42, 43 for a high. Start your snow dances, everybody.
Either that or be ready to go up to 4,000 feet.
Not a lot of snow falls in 40-degree weather, okay? I have that on good authority from Cliff Mass.
Impeccable source.
Okay. Very interesting appearance. Our good friend Adam Smith, who, despite being in the other party, is a voice of occasional sanity. Don't always agree with Adam Smith, often disagree, but he seems to be taking the election loss a lot more seriously. He's doing a lot more hard thinking about what this means to the Democratic Party than some of his colleagues. You've heard me say it many times, and I'll say it again. The best friend that Donald Trump has in the Washington congressional delegation is Pramila Jayapal. As long as she's out there pushing her party to the left, pushing it away from everyday ordinary America, pushing it away from solutions that work and towards solutions that cost a lot of money and actually make things worse, the more it helps President Trump, the more it helps Republicans. So, anyway, Adam Smith was being interviewed by another good friend of ours, Brandi Cruz. And they were talking about the recent pro-Hamas protesters who vandalized his residence in Bellevue. Here's what he had to say.
You know, I'll tell you. Yeah, should I say this? Oh,
you can. Go ahead.
So, you know, when at 5 o'clock in the morning, I had 20, you know, lunatics out in front of my house banging on drums and screaming through loudspeakers and waking up and terrifying my neighbors and everybody else. You know, I had a moment when I was like, well, I guess if Donald Trump was mayor of this city, this wouldn't be happening.
Oh.
Okay. So, all right. You know, and then I was like, yeah, but a whole lot of other much worse things would be happening. So, no, I'm not going there.
Yeah, I don't think much worse things would be happening. Adam Smith has said it's time for the Democratic Party to rebrand. It's time for the Democratic Party to understand that this wasn't just a rejection of Kamala Harris. a rejection of Joe Biden. It was a rejection of his party, what his party has become. His party has been less and less hospitable to people who believe in things like obeying the law, who believe in things like the traditional family, who believe in things like colorblind equality rather than racial politics, who believe in things like a border that is actually enforced, who believe in things like a growing economy that is noticed by people at ground level, not just the financial class. And I don't know if his party is going to get the message on this or not. Adam surely gets it. Not surprisingly, Adam is not the product of the Ivy League and a wealthy background. Adam grew up in SeaTac and held down jobs while going to the University of Washington. He is not like Luigi Mangione. Luigi Mangione, who was apprehended yesterday at an Altoona McDonald's. One of our listeners very cleverly pointed out, very interesting, somebody who hates corporate America left clues at a Starbucks, one of the world's largest coffee houses.
Yeah, that was the water bottle that was purchased at the New York City Starbucks the morning of the assassination.
And was apprehended at a McDonald's. There's over 13,000 McDonald's in the United States. And tens of thousands more throughout the world. Luigi Mangione is unlike a lot of working class people. He's got the kind of background that some of the people who go into Antifa have. He's from a privileged, coddled background. He was born with good health and good looks. He went to a private school. Basically, it's the equivalent of Lakeside School. In Baltimore. This is not someone who, was denied the basics growing up. He had everything you could hope to have growing up. And all he did was nurse this sense of hatred and resentment of corporate America in general and the healthcare industry in particular. He was charged yesterday with murder, additional counts, illegal gun possession, forgery, etc. It'll be interesting to see if federal authorities want him tried on federal charges or whether Alvin Bragg, the same guy who threw the book at Donald Trump and tried to throw the book at Daniel Penny, but it bounced off. He was acquitted of all charges yesterday. It'll be interesting to see what he wants to charge Luigi Mangione with. Because Alvin Bragg, the New York DA, is notorious for going easy on criminals, real criminals. An alert McDonald's employee recognized him, called the police. When police arrived, they found Mr. Mangione with fake ID, a weapon similar to the one that's seen in the video, a manifesto decrying the healthcare industry, and a silencer. For a guy who's really bright, it was probably not the most intelligent thing to do to be packing all sorts of evidence that can be used against you in the trial for murder that you are now going to be facing. But it'll be interesting to see what charges that Alvin Bragg brings against Luigi Mangione, because in some circles, in progressive circles, Mangione is a borderline hero, someone who's striking back at the healthcare industry. So, the one thing about Mangione is very interesting here. Again, is after going to the Gilman School, which I mentioned to you earlier in the show, he was an athlete. He was valedictorian of his graduating class back in 2016. Thanked his parents for sending him there. He ended up at Penn, University of Pennsylvania, gets a degree, both a bachelor's and a master's degree in computer engineering. He's no dummy. He actually was a member of the Academic Honor Society, so he's got good health, good looks, good grades, good credentials, apparently a nice family. His sister is a respected physician. And then something went very off. He apparently hurt his back and was suffering from painful back issues, pinched nerve in his back. But other than that, you know, he had a job in California working for a software company, had a job in Southern California, then San Francisco, then Hawaii. And other than having, you know, this fascination with the Unabomber, it's hard to see what this guy, what was really driving this guy. Again, there are some people who think that he is a hero, but no, I'm sorry. No, Mr. Thompson didn't do anything wrong other than heading a company that happens to be the most popular company in America for purchasing or for selling Medicare Advantage plans. So people like the product that they are selling. He ran the insurance wing of United Healthcare. We've seen the same trend among others. You remember several years ago, I think it was 2021, maybe it was 2020, on tape, there was video of a masked Antifa demonstrator hitting a police officer over the head with an aluminum baseball bat. Do you remember that, Phil?
Yeah, and the officer had a helmet on, thankfully.
Luckily, he was wearing a helmet. Yeah. And it turned out the person responsible was 19-year-old, a son of a, is either a prominent physician or psychiatrist, and stepson of a former Democratic state legislator from Redmond. And yet here he is, hitting a police officer over the head with an aluminum baseball bat. And by the way, I don't mean, you know, poking or hitting. He used both hands and swung it overhead. I mean, he was trying to really hurt this cop.
Trying to generate as much force with that bat as possible, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the tape speaks for itself. And then, you know, again, it's just this spoiled, coddled child of privilege. And, you know, you see this happen from time to time in this country. We talked about during the Vietnam War years, the case of Silas Bissell, who is an heir to the carpet sweeper, the vacuum cleaner company. It used to be a big company back in the 70s. And here he's heir to that fortune, and he's caught planting a bomb on the UW campus at the ROTC building. And I don't mean like a glorified M80, a serious bomb that could seriously kill people. There was, you know, many members of the Weather Underground were children of privilege. You just ask yourself, what on earth could cause people who are in a position to do so much good to instead use their wealth and their connections and their intelligence to try and destroy, to try and hurt, to try and kill? But that's what this guy is. And he's looking at, well, very serious time if he's convicted of what he's accused of doing. And apparently, on tape, if it's him, ambushing, assassinating, essentially, a businessman on his way into a hotel to give a speech. It is 20 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. There's a lot of other things going on. Plus, our KVI text line has been on fire all morning long. We'll be sharing some of the sentiments there as well. Philip J. Vandervoort III ready to share some sentiments. Social media postings, social media from socialists. Next on The Commute with Carlson. Good morning. The late, great Toby Keith. John Carlson Show. By the way, the latest celebrity to do the Trump dance, if only for just a couple of seconds, George Strait.
Yeah.
Has he been on tour or something?
George Strait, he's in Vegas. Oh, I think okay. he might be doing a residence sort of in Vegas. But he walks out on stage and does the little Trump shift, you know, the little Trump dance, and then continues walking out with a smile on his face, huge cheer, ovation from the crowd.
Cha-ching for the village people, yes. Even though they were all for Harris, they approve licensing and everything for the Trump campaign.
Philip J. Vandervoort III, speaking of Trump and politics, what's going on in the social media world?
Yeah, the socialists on social media, and this one is going to revolve around the assassination of the United Healthcare CEO and the arrest and of the suspect in Pennsylvania. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. This one comes from the account of a national surrogate for Bernie Sanders in 2016 and then the national co-chair of the Bernie Sanders campaign in 2020. This is a former Ohio State senator, so state senator from Ohio, Nina Turner. And Nina Turner posted this. She wrote, for-profit healthcare will always fail us as it's not designed to heal us. It's designed to extract our money. So kind of the typical Bernie Sanders' point of view that somehow something that's for profit is somehow a negative or bad. And then she concludes it by saying it's in the name for profit. But what she's overlooking is that profit motive for housing, for health care.
Well, how about for food? For,
yeah.
You know.
For food is, you know, food supply, farming and all that. That's the big motivator. That kind of helps set the table for incentivizing someone to produce more for less. And by eliminating any profit motive, you eliminate that most efficient formula for achieving those medical breakthroughs, those medical treatments, those medical cures. And this is kind of the mindset of the Bernie Sanders progressive left of, well, let's just throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, there's a reason why there are many, many Canadians who come to the United States for their health care.
That was one of the first places my mind went.
Rather than Americans who run up to Canada to have surgery.
I wanted to search that out a little bit to kind of get a pulse on that. And one of the things I found is a Canadian news website called globalnews.ca, and they cite a poll from March 4th of 2024, just 7, 8, 9 months ago, that says, would you cross the border to the United States for health care? 42% of Canadians say yes in a poll. So there they have government-run universal health care, and 42% feel like they don't get served very well, at least to the point where they consider going to a place that has free market medical care as a maybe a solution.
I mean, they were sending, the Canadian province was, BC, British Columbia, was sending cancer patients to Whatcom County.
Right, yeah.
We talked about this.
BC, exactly.
When it was in the news. So,
and this poll, to kind of further underscore the point, the year prior, it was about 9 points less. So they've jumped up 9 percentage points of Canadians that would come to the U.S. To obtain better health care.
Yeah.
So that's the direction it's going in Canada for their state-run, government-run health care. So keep that in mind.
There's nothing wrong with American health care that socialism is going to cure. In fact, government is far too involved already. So are insurance companies. I mean, we need really systemic overhaul reform, and once again have the doctor-patient relationship with as few interactions and distractions from government and insurance companies as possible. But that's another topic for another day here. It is coming up on 8:30, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. What you have to say on the KVI text line, 206-421-5757, coming right up. Okay, I like the Stevie Wonder version of the song better. However, little local roots here. Well, Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam. All right.
You recognize the vocal.
Well, talk like when he sings like this.
He does have a distinct sound, right? I had no idea Pearl Jam was into making Christmas tunes.
You have such an expanded audience with The Commute with Carlson. We've got to please everybody here.
Have a very grungy Christmas, Western Washington.
To the comment line we go. Alice, Olympia, on the arrest of Luigi Mangione for the murder of healthcare company CEO Brian Thompson. Number one, thou shalt not kill. Number two, greed is a sin. Number three, it isn't right to work in the healthcare industry making an exorbitant salary off the backs of customers whose claims are denied without recourse. Maybe Luigi's back injury gave him some negative experience with the healthcare industry. Maybe, but you know, there's a lot of people who have an aching back who don't blame the insurance company.
If that ultimately becomes the story of the motivation.
And why would the healthcare industry be an industry where you shouldn't be allowed to earn a high salary? why is it any more greedy to make a high salary in a healthcare company than it is a software company or a football franchise?
Yeah, I mean, this has a paradoxical effect in how much school district superintendents make, sometimes $300,000, $400,000 in some cases.
Ray in the town of Yelm. His college roommate said Luigi was a normal guy during his time at the University of Pennsylvania. Normal has meant flaming leftist at Ivy League schools for quite a while now. Fair point. A TJ in Renton. Don't spin the company as somehow holy. I'm not defending his murder, but mega corporations with giant compulsory government contracts is not a popular company unless you consider the IRS as a friendly organization. Well, here's one big difference, TJ. I can't choose whether to do business with the IRS or not. They get to make that choice, right? I could choose whether to be a customer of United Healthcare.
Or somebody else, like Aetna, or take your pick.
Blue Cross, yeah. Blue Shield, or what have you. And I happen to be a customer of United Healthcare. Marvin Tukwila, the guy who threatened Daniel Penny. This is the subway hero who the left-wing DA of Manhattan tried to turn into a murderer. The guy who threatened Penny should be jailed immediately. This is what he was referring to.
Just like everybody else has vigilantes, we need some black vigilantes.
That's right.
People want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud. How about we do the same?
Okay, I don't think he was choked for being loud. I think this guy who, again, to repeat what I said earlier, had recently been released from Rikers prison because he attacked a 67-year-old woman and broke several bones in her face, assaulting her, was on a subway threatening to kill people and was out of control when Daniel Penny stepped in to subdue him. The problem here with the Black Lives Matter activists is everything about this case is completely colored, pun intended, by the race of the people involved, Daniel Penny being Caucasian, and Jordan Neely being black. Well, if the races were reversed, would the Black Lives Matter protesters have the same position? Of course not. They would completely reverse. They'd change their position. That's the test of civil rights, or the test of racism. Would you feel the same way if the races were reversed? I would feel exactly the same way if Daniel Penny was black and he was subduing a crazy white dude. This had nothing to do with race. It had to do with behavior, out of control behavior on the part of Jordan Neely and several black passengers on that subway train testified on behalf of Daniel Penny. They were frightened too. So, those kinds of threats. I really don't know if this guy uttering threats like that is just continuing the cynical use of race that the prosecution used. You know, you have a woke DA hiring woke prosecutors who were throughout the Daniel Penny trial. This didn't get much attention from the news media. Kept referring to Daniel Penny not as Mr. Penny or not as the defendant, but as the white defendant or the white man. The judge let him do it. they were trying to racialize this trial just as surely as some cynical Southern prosecutor in the Deep South would racialize a trial to get a guilty verdict against a black man. Now it's happening in Manhattan. It doesn't matter which race. The tactic itself is despicable. Marvin in Tukwila goes on to say, if I'm involved in a domestic dispute and threaten my wife, rest assured law enforcement would be exiting me from my own home. The guy who threatened Daniel Penny needs mental health. Bob in Portland said, I don't see myself stepping up to help a stranger because I don't want to get sued by Bob Ferguson. Well, rest assured, Bob, the law in Washington would be on your side if you did. This is kind of the dirty little secret that liberals don't like to spend much time and attention talking about. The law in Washington state, when it comes to the civilian use of force, including deadly force, is very much on the side of the law-abiding citizen. That is one takeaway. And just some of the comments we have on the KVI text line this morning. All right, let's keep it local. Neighbors in Redmond want more safeguards because of a low barrier, there's a euphemism, low barrier homeless housing complex. Low barrier means authorities will look the other way if you use drugs on the premises. Keep in mind, if you use drugs on the premises, there will be drug dealers on the premises. There will be people who will probably be going out to commit crimes to get money to buy more drugs. Low barrier means look the other way when they're using drugs. That never ends well. Here's Como 4's Preston Phillips.
A plan to run a homeless housing facility in Redmond has neighbors calling for safeguards against drug use in the building before any tenants move in. The plan is to build a 100-unit permanent supportive housing facility run by a nonprofit called Plymouth Housing in downtown Redmond. However, neighbors want safeguards in place to prevent people living here from doing drugs.
Quick insert here. We've had a KVI listener who worked for a company that contracted with Plymouth Housing. He described the filth, the stench, the property damage, the open use and presence of drug paraphernalia and drug use. He said, this building is almost brand new. They've already trashed it. That's Plymouth Housing. That's Plymouth Housing's reputation. And now they're going to run a 100-unit? You can blame, there's one person, Angela Burney, the mayor of Redmond. She is responsible for doing this. She thinks she wants to move up in the political world, and she thought this would help her with the King County political establishment. Maybe it will. I'm not sure it's going to help her with her constituents, because we're not talking about, you know, an apartment for 8 or 9 people, 100 units, low barrier shelter. Most of the people there are not from Redmond. The overwhelming majority will be from Seattle. They'll be from other places. Let's continue.
No unlawful acts and no illegal drugs, including fentanyl, should be done in the building. If they don't put that in, then later on, if it becomes a big problem, they have a tough time telling them, hey, you're violating your operating agreement. We want to shut you down.
Plymouth House.
That's a neighbor, and he's spot on.
Housing hopes to break ground on this housing complex next year. The operating agreement has yet to be formalized between the city and Plymouth Housing.
The public needs to step in and get very much involved there. All right, you've got 48 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Coming up, a special segment, the likes of which I've never done before. I'm going to tell you about it's coming up in the near future on the John Carlson Show. Stand by. Tony Bennett on fire. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Okay. You may have heard me mention this, but during the COVID period, we'll call it, I ended up falling off my fitness routine and my diet, and I gained a bunch of weight, and I needed to lose the weight, and I kept putting it off, and I need to find the perfect diet. Finally, my son, Matthew, said, hey, have you heard of the fast metabolism diet? And I had not heard of it. And he only knew about it because his boss went on it. And here's the bottom line. I said, son, look, I don't want a diet where you have to take drugs. He said, you don't. I said, well, I don't want a diet where you have to go hungry. He said, you don't. I said, I don't want a diet where you can eat plenty of food and it tastes like cardboard. He said, you don't. I said, well, look, I'm in no mood to shell out a lot of money like you have to for some of these diet programs where they give you your packets of food and things like that. He said, you don't. He said, it's a book, The Fast Metabolism Diet. And the website, fastmetabolismdiet.com. Check it out. I did. I went on the diet. It's a 28-day diet. And I did not go hungry, and I ate delicious food, and I lost almost 19 pounds. 19 pounds in 28 days. Then I stayed on a variation of the diet, and I've lost another 8 pounds, and it stayed off. I'm going to talk to the lady behind this diet on Thursday's show at 8:05. So, again, putting politics aside and just talking about, you know, your personal health and fitness and how you're feeling, you might want to be listening, and yet an additional reason to listen to the John Carlson Show this Thursday at 8 o'clock. In the meantime, get out there, enjoy this day, and let's talk again in 21 short hours. Legendary lyric time tomorrow.